Episode 61 of the Online Chicken School Podcast. Today we're talking about scaly leg mites.
Ew.
It's time for the Online Chicken School Podcast. Whether you've been keeping chickens for years or you're just fixing to get started, we'll help you get your schooling. And now, here's the chicken tenders, Don and Susie.
Hello, I'm Don, the big chicken tender.
And I'm Susie, the little chicken tender. If you're interested in backyard chickens, you're in the right place. It doesn't matter if you have a whole lot of chickens out in the country or just a few somewhere in the city. This is where we share our knowledge, experience, and opinions to help you get the most out of your backyard flock. Well, I want to start today's show by talking about a funny thing that happened in our gold lace Wyandotte coop. You know, we go out and check on the chickens almost daily, but we check their feed and water twice a week, right? I mean, we go the middle of the week and then we usually go the weekend and check on them.
Minimally. Usually we check more often, especially now that we're past the time change.
Mm-hmm.
It's just we have more daylight when I get home from work, when you get home from work, to spend more time out in the yard, and the chickens aren't up on the roost pole asleep. So it gives us more of an opportunity to kind of stroll around and just see what everybody's up to and just be more in touch with what's going on in all the different coops.
So while we're out there checking on the chickens, we check on their feed, their water, collect the eggs, play with them a little bit. That's usually when we do our, you know, monthly parasite check. And every week we were running across the gold lace coop. Now, these are the young gold laces. This isn't the general and his lady. These are the young ones that we're raising up. And every time we would check on them, it didn't matter if it was 2 days after you just filled up their water, 1 day after, 4 days. It was always like, there's always like just a half inch of water in there.
Yeah, it could not figure out what was going on, because the first thing I assumed is the bucket's leaking. You know, one of the nipples is leaking. So you'd fill their bucket with water and you'd sit there and you'd watch it. And they do leak a little bit.
Right.
But not anything to account for 3 gallons of water being gone in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And I even switched out the nipples on them, just trying to figure out, why are these 5 birds, they're only 7 months old.
Right.
Why are they going through so much water? I mean, 3 times as much water as all the other chickens.
Mm-hmm. And you're constantly filling it up. So, I mean, this went on, what was it, like weeks?
At least a month. It's been going on for a while.
And finally, the mystery has been solved.
Yes, and kind of feel a little foolish.
I would never have guessed that this was happening, but it was right around dusk that I went out to check on something, and I'm like, oh, well, I may as well swing around the gold lace coop. I was walking right by it. So I, you know, crouch down and I open up their coop and I look inside and I'm like, why is the water bucket like tilted, like at an extreme angle? Like, what is going on? And so then I had to actually sit on the ground so I could see in there. And wouldn't you know, one of the gold laces had her big fat butt up on top of the bucket. That's where she was roosting at night, was on the corner of the bucket, which was causing it to tip, which was causing all the water to come out. That silly, silly girl. Oh, my gosh. So I had a little talk with her, and I don't think I got through to her.
What amazes me is chickens love water.
Mm-hmm.
And they, at least ours, don't mind the rain. They don't mind when it's raining out.
Oh, they love it.
But they don't like water in the sense of getting squirted with a hose or a bucket of water thrown on them. And I'm like, she's roosting on the bucket, which causes it to tip over, which means all the water is pouring right past her feet onto the ground.
Right. It is so weird.
And she just sits there. Okay.
It'll stop pretty soon, I guess.
She does have the cleanest feet of the coop, though.
Yes, she does. Well, maybe that's where it started. She's like, I've got poo on my feet. How do I get it off? She's like, I bet if I jump up on that bucket and tilt it just enough, it'll wash my feet.
You know, 3 gallons of water weighs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just amazed that she has enough weight to tip that bucket enough to pour some water out of it.
And they're always so skittish anyway when something moves, or, you know, you go to pick up the tractor to move it and they all flip out. I can't imagine how that thing has to rock when she jumps up on it every day And she's just completely fine with it. She's just such a funny girl. So we decided, instead of trying to figure out a way to keep her off that bucket, it was time anyway. They were getting a little crowded in the smaller chicken tractor that we had. So we actually moved them into their luxury condo, and we have not had a problem since.
Just makes you shake your head because you just never know what you're dealing with when you have chickens.
That is very true. Okay, in the last episode, I told a little story about my niece, Brooke, and how her and I have this running joke now where you say, guess what? And the other one says chicken butt. Or when I see her across, you know, the driveway at my parents' house, she'll yell out chicken butt. You know, it's one of those weird things that we do. I don't think my parents like it too much. They're like, stop yelling chicken butt in our neighborhood.
I think they've had enough of it, but boy, Brooke just can't get enough.
It gets a smile and a laugh every time. So I'm just going to keep doing it until it doesn't get a laugh anymore, because that's, you know, that's how I roll.
I'm hoping she's over it before she graduates high school, because it's a long road.
It is. But the funny thing is, I was walking through Walmart, I think it was the day after we recorded the last episode, and I found the Guess What Chicken Butt t-shirt. I didn't even know it was out there, but it was like this brown background, and then it had like a white chicken. And at the top, it says, Guess What? And then it's got an arrow pointing to the butt of a chicken. I was on cloud nine, and I also loved it because it was only $5.
Well, I was going to say, the thing you love the most is the sign above it that says, sale.
So, of course, I had to buy one for me, for Don, and one for Brooke. And the problem was, Brooke is only 4 years old, and these were in the men's section, and I couldn't find anything smaller than a medium. So I bring it home, I'm trying to shrink it. And, you know, every stupid shirt that I buy, I will accidentally shrink it. This one, I could not purposely shrink it to get it to fit her. So the following weekend, I brought it to my parents' house. She happened to be there, and I took it out, and she went nuts. First, she thought it was a dress, which I thought was adorable.
Well, it is on her.
It looks like
it is a dress on her. It comes down to her ankles.
And then I showed her mine, of course, and she just loved that we had matching shirts. And so we had to go outside and take a bunch of pictures.
You know, when you bought the t-shirts, you said, do you want me to get you one? And I said, I really don't care. You can get me one, not get me one. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you brought them home, we knew Brooke was going to be over at your parents' house on the weekend. So we said, look, we're going to go over and we're going to get a really cute picture of you and Brooke in your chicken shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, okay, well, you need to be in it too. And I said, no, I'm not doing the group picture.
Right.
Just the two of you. I will take the picture, but I'm not going to be in the group picture with the matching shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So we get over there and you show Brooke your t-shirt, which she goes all crazy about. Then you show her her t-shirt, which she goes all crazy about. And instead of doing what you're supposed to do and just saying, all right, let's have our pictures taken together, you go, and Uncle Don's got a t-shirt too, and we're all going to have our picture taken together.
I know, nothing like a little peer pressure, huh?
It's funny, we've been married more than 13 years now, and you still haven't learned that the men in my family cannot be pressured into doing hardly anything.
One of these days, I'm going to succeed.
You keep trying, though.
I never give up.
You keep thinking, one of these days, it's going to work.
Not yet, but I never give up either.
The day it does work, you're going to have to be worried about me. Like, oh my gosh, what happened?
Well, that's the test to see if you're like losing your edge. Be like, oh no. It'll be like, oh, I got the victory. And then, oh shoot, he must be losing it.
Yeah, right. Okay, one last thing I want to talk about that's going on the farm is the batch of baby chicks that we're raising up as future possible replacements for the existing flock.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about getting these just about exactly 4 weeks ago.
Yep.
There are still 25 of them.
That's a good thing.
They're still in the garage.
Not as great a thing.
And Susie is definitely ready for them to stop being in the garage.
You can clean their little brooder and put new shavings in there, get it all nice and fresh, and you go inside. And then 10 minutes later, you come out, and you go, I wonder how they're doing. And you're like, oh my God, what happened in this garage? It's like they can smell up a brooder in about 10 minutes.
Well, let me give you a little rundown of the brooder life of a baby chick.
Mm-hmm.
Week one, they're adorable.
Aw.
We put them on paper towels the first week, so no shavings to deal with whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Your biggest concern week one is, man, how do they mess up a paper towel so fast?
That's right.
Not really smelly, but it does shock you when you're like, oh my gosh, I just changed a paper towel a half hour ago. Now it looks like a modern art masterpiece.
And because the heat lamp's in there, it dries really quick. So you're like, wow, there is like a solid layer of hard poo on this paper towel.
Yeah, it's like adobe brick.
Yes.
Week two, they're still adorable. This is when we switch them to wood shavings.
Mm-hmm.
But what we use for brooders are small animal cages, and they have a good size lip on the bottom.
Right.
And the baby chicks do get some shavings outside of the coop, but not many. No. Most of them stay inside.
Yeah.
Week three, now they're four times the size they were in week one.
Yep.
And they're getting pretty big. I think it was at this point I switched them. I actually divided them all out into three brooders because they were getting 25 of them in one brooder. They were getting too big.
Yeah.
But that first half is not really such a big deal. The first 3 weeks. Now we're into the second 3 weeks, and this is when it really becomes an ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
Because now they're big enough that they somehow manage to get just about every shaving out of the brooder and onto the floor.
Well, they're learning how to scratch and hunt, and I guess they think there may be one morsel of food underneath all those shavings,
yeah.
And I'm going to find it if I have to kick every one of them out of here, and they're good at it.
Well, that's the worst part is they have no experience that tells them that there's insects under there because there aren't any.
Right.
There might be a little food under there, but not really. That's not where they find their food. They got a giant bucket of food hanging over their head that they can have any moment.
That's right.
So when one of them looks over at the other and they're just scratching the ground nonstop, throwing shavings like they're a wood chipper.
Mm-hmm.
And Henrietta looks over at Louise and says, what are you doing? And she's like, I have no idea. I'm just doing it.
I just got to do it.
It's just like an instinct. Like, I have no idea why I'm doing this. I just am.
One day when they go outside, they're going to learn why. They're going to like do what they're doing now and go, oh, wow, this is why we were doing it. All that practice is worth it. Look at this little worm.
Yeah, but now they're like, this is just oddly satisfying, but I have no idea why.
I think you're right. Not so much satisfying for me, who is sweeping the garage twice a day and then somehow still tracking wood shavings all through my house. Driving me crazy.
Well, we spent about a half hour this morning debating, can we just get them out a week early?
I know.
How about next week at the beginning of week five, we put them out?
Yeah.
It'll be a week early. You know, they're not fully feathered yet, but it is so warm here. We have put out birds at 5 weeks when they weren't fully feathered, but
right.
It was the middle of summer. And it's like at night, it doesn't get below 85.
Right. Yeah. It's a sweatshop out there.
I think it's a little early. It's spring. It's not really summer, but oh, we're just tempted.
I know, because we've suffered through it this long. We don't want anything bad to happen to them, I guess. So
yeah,
we'll tough it out. But we are able to tell now which ones are male and which ones are female in the Bard Rock brooder. I'm pretty sure about the ones in the Delaware brooder. But the gold laces are still a little bit of a mystery to me.
I think I got to figure it out. I know one that's definitely a rooster. There's no doubt. He's just mammoth.
Yeah.
He's big, but not only is he big, he's sort of blocky.
Yeah, that's true.
He doesn't have lines and curves like the hens do. Mm-hmm. He looks kind of square.
Now, the Bard Rocks, they're a little bit easier to tell even before the size difference, because what we've noticed is the legs of the females are, first of all, a little skinnier, but they're also much darker. You know, they've got the splash of that black on their legs. And I'm telling you, the last couple batches we've done, it has been almost 90% that I'm able to tell a couple weeks in which ones are males and females, because our two males, they have much lighter feathering and their legs have hardly any black on them.
Well, that's the tell that does it for me, is the darkness of the feathering. You know, Bard Rocks are black and white, and the males, after a few weeks, just like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, it's very noticeable that the black on the males is a little more pale than the black on the females.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's subtle, but when they're standing in a batch together, it stands out like nobody's business. It's like, oh, wow, those ones are much lighter. Oh, those are the males.
Right. And we've got two males in there, which is the way we ordered it. We're very happy we didn't get more males than we ordered. So I was looking at the two males this morning and I'm like, okay, I picked out the one I like already.
Yeah.
He's just gorgeous. And he's just got that curious look and stuff. So I'm hoping he's going to turn out really well and his feathers are going to look beautiful when they finally all come in. But I do already have a name picked out.
Okay, well, he is a Bard Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And you had it narrowed down to Chris Rock or Kid Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a Bard Rock.
Right. You want to know which one I picked?
Tell me.
All right. I picked Kid Rock.
Okay.
Yep. That's what it's going to be.
So you're going to throw Chris Rock back in the name bin for the next batch or what?
I'm not sure. We'll just see. It's just got to be, it's all about the attitude, you know? You just got to feel it out. But all the chickens are just individuals. Sometimes a name just fits.
So what is it about this one at 4 weeks old that you feel he embraces Kid Rockiness?
I don't know, but when I look at him, I just say, yes, that's Kid Rock.
Okay.
So.
I'll take it.
Good. All right, so I've come up with the name for one. You're on your own for the other 24.
And now, the news. News.
Okay, leading off the news today is a little story about the grocery store chain Whole Foods. And they have decided to basically abandon the Cornish cross chicken as their meat option for their stores.
That is a big, big move. That's a huge announcement.
It's kind of unprecedented for a store of this size.
Right.
So according to their press release, they are going to spend the next 8 years switching over their chicken suppliers from the traditional Cornish cross, which is the meat chicken you get in every grocery store
mm-hmm.
across the country. That is the standard meat bird.
Right.
And they're going to switch over to slower growing Red Ranger broilers.
Now, these aren't brand new birds. These are birds that have been around a while. I mean, they're kind of like the alternative to the Cornish cross anyway for a lot of backyard chicken keepers that don't like the idea of the Cornish cross.
They do grow faster than, say, a traditional heritage bird would in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
But they do grow slower than the Cornish cross. So it takes 25% more time for them to get to butcher weight than it does a Cornish cross.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying they're doing this. It's basically from market pressure. You know, there's a lot more attention nowadays on the welfare of chickens growing up in the chicken industry.
Right.
And so they want to address some of these things. And one of those is the fact that Cornish cross have a tendency to grow so fast that their little bodies can't support all that weight. They put on a lot of meat weight,
mm-hmm.
but their bones and their skeletal structure never grow fast enough in order to support that. So you get a lot of injuries. You get a lot of sick birds.
Mm-hmm.
That's just common in the commercial meat industry. That's just sort of accepted.
Right. Absolutely. Now, they say they are going to make other improvements other than just changing the breed. They haven't said that the Red Rangers are going to be pasture raised birds, that they're ever going to see grass or fresh air or anything like that. But they are going to improve the conditions inside the warehouse.
Right. So they still will be grown in those grow houses. But they are saying that they're going to provide them with 25% more space than what's allowed traditional Cornish cross.
Mm-hmm. And they'll have straw bales and little roosting poles and things. So just little things that, you know, will probably make a big difference for the life of a chicken, as short as it is in those kind of places. You know, it's something. It's more than what a lot of other places are doing.
Well, obviously, as somebody who likes chickens,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a great move. As somebody who studies the market economy, this is going to be interesting.
It sure is.
Because among American consumers, awareness about the welfare of chickens has been growing over the past years. And besides just the animal welfare side of it, we care more about the food that we're eating and where it comes from. But it's one thing to demand it.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to say, I'm willing to pay for it.
That's where it's going to be interesting for me, because Whole Foods products are already at kind of the top of the price market anyway. It's going to be interesting to me how much more that adds on to the price of a chicken and to see if people are willing to put their money where their mouth is. I mean, are you going to be a hypocrite and cry for all these chickens and say you want all these things, but then when someone gives you what you want to go, I don't know. I'm not going to pay an extra $10.
The Facebook culture that we've become,
mm-hmm.
it's just about, I care enough to share my opinion.
Yes. I shared this post, so I've done my part.
Don't you see how much I care? I actually wrote a thing about how much I care on Facebook. I used 14 words
right.
about how much I care.
Yeah.
And you say, well, are you going to do anything about it? I did. I shared my opinion. It's like, okay, but what about paying for some change? Well, that's somebody else's job. I shared my opinion. I did my part. Someone should pay for that. Not me, though.
Right. So now when it becomes available, that's going to be a big question. Are you going to support it with your pocketbook or not?
That's why I think this is an interesting move for Whole Foods. They're giving you the opportunity to do more than just say, I put it on Facebook that I care about chickens.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving you the opportunity to pay a lot more for chickens that are better taken care of.
Well, and you'll also get the added benefit of that chicken lived a little longer. It's going to have a little more flavor. So you'll actually get a different tasting chicken as well. So hopefully people will see the value in it and say, all right, I'm willing to spend more money because the chicken was taken care of better, had a better life, and it's actually delicious.
Well, that is part of their promotion, is the fact that the chicken tastes better. It's not going to be quite as gamey and tasty as the heritage chicken in your backyard because it didn't live quite as long. So it's somewhere in between. It's somewhere in between the blandness of the Cornish cross and the incredibly rich flavor of your 16-week-old bird that you processed in your backyard.
I have a feeling that if it's a huge fail, it's just going to go away very quietly and they're going to kind of switch back.
Like if I could picture Walmart doing this, what they would do is say, we're introducing a new line of chicken products in our stores.
Right.
And this one costs more, but you can tell yourself that, hey, these animals were treated better. And if it doesn't work, that line just goes away.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like for Whole Foods, this is an all or nothing proposition.
Yeah, that's interesting. A big risk, huge risk, but yeah. I'm hoping it's going to pay off, especially for the chickens. All right, so switching gears a little bit, we're going to talk about Virginia and a little change that they recently made. Their House approved lighter punishment for dogs that kill chickens.
Yeah, basically, the way the law currently stands in Virginia, if a dog kills a chicken, there is a mandatory punishment. Basically, there are only two options to choose from.
Two pretty extreme options, I think.
One is that you euthanize the dog.
Immediately. Like, there is no, oh, we bring them somewhere for a couple weeks and, you know, evaluate them. It's no, right now.
Yeah. They take out spot on the spot. The second option is basically you can ship the dog to another state.
Oh, but not just another state. A state that does not border in any way the state of Virginia. Because he may find his way back.
They don't want that sneaky dog sneaking back across the border.
Sometimes you just look at these laws and go, who wrote this? This is so weird.
Well, originally this law was written to protect chicken farmers, commercial chicken farmers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these chicken farms are out in the country. You live out in the country, you got more of a chance of running into dogs running around loose.
Right.
And so your neighbor's hound dog comes over and starts killing your chickens, which is how you feed your children.
Mm-hmm.
Then they want a remedy to be able to deal with it. And I guess they just want to take it seriously enough. So a number of years ago, they made this law and says, well, you can basically euthanize the dog on the spot. That is the punishment unless you can ship them away.
Well, and I think that when you have a strong punishment like that, it makes people that have dogs a little more careful. You may kind of say, let's not just leave this stuff up to chance. Let's actually fix our fence and make sure we keep our dog in our yard. Maybe people took it a little more serious if their dog could actually be euthanized if it got away.
But that sort of underestimates the careless attitude toward intellect that some people take. And where you see this pop up all the time is you have a dog owner. And listen, we love dogs. We have the three. We love our dogs to death. But some dog owners are a little clueless.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll let their dog run the neighborhood. You can never put a leash on them. Heaven forbid you build a fence around your yard. I'm going to take my Great Dane outside, and he's going to run the neighborhood at will, tromping on children, other animals, cats, and basically just being a terror to the entire community. And no care for that whatsoever. And it'll run around for months and months and months. And then someday, it'll go after somebody's chicken. And that person will shoot the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will see them cry about how much they loved that dog. That dog was such an important member of the family. And I can't believe that someone would kill that dog over a chicken. That person should be thrown in prison.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you cared about your dog, you wouldn't be letting him run around the neighborhood where he can get hit by cars, get hit by the garbage truck.
Right.
If you cared about your dog, you wouldn't do that.
Right.
But you'll see the tears.
Oh, right. And it's very unfair to the dog. You know, it's a dog. It's going to live within the boundaries that you set up, but you must set up boundaries. And if you don't, unfortunately, it's the dog that gets penalized.
And listen, there are things that happen. We have a completely fenced yard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two of our dogs not only have a physical fence, but also have an invisible fence, a little collar around their neck.
Yeah.
And we go to great lengths to make sure our dogs don't get out.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It does happen sometimes.
Right.
So I'm not mad at the person who their dog accidentally gets out.
Right.
But there are those people, and you know who they are. You've probably met a few of them. They're just that careless.
Mm-hmm.
Those people drive me nuts. If Virginia passed a law that said, if your dog gets out and is out all the time and terrorizing the neighborhood and causing destruction, we may euthanize you as the owner. I would almost be okay with that.
I think I would vote for maybe like a harsh punishment of community service.
Yeah. And then euthanize them. Obviously, I don't mean that seriously.
Right.
You know, I'm a big believer in people controlling their dogs. But I don't like these automatic punishments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes all reason out of the equation, and it takes all judgment out of the equation, and it doesn't allow, and we're not talking about the homeowner or the dog owner. We're talking about a judge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone should have the ability to look at all the facts of a scenario and say, listen, this is what's reasonable.
Right.
Not just, well, my hands are tied. Our neighbor has two German shepherds.
Mm-hmm.
If they ever had a chance to eat one of our chickens, they'd do it in a heartbeat.
Oh, chicken's delicious.
But if one of her dogs managed to get into our yard and get one of our chickens and kill it, I wouldn't want some animal control guy coming out here and say, well, we got to put down that German shepherd.
Oh my gosh.
I wouldn't want him to put down her dog.
Well, no, you don't take one tragedy and make it two tragedies.
Yeah, especially because it's an isolated thing. Now, if her dog was over here like every day snacking on her chickens, I might have a different story.
Yeah.
She does everything she can to keep her dogs in her yard.
Mm-hmm.
And if somehow one just managed to sneak out through no fault of her own, and even if it was a fault of her own, but just an honest mistake, even then I wouldn't care.
Right.
I would never say put that dog down because it killed one of our chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't like the automatic nature of the law. So I kind of like the fact that they're revisiting this and saying, let's allow a judge to use some reasoning skills and figure out what makes sense in a situation.
So there are a couple more options that they're opening up here. And one of them is that the dog get microchipped so that it's easier to track. You know, if a dog doesn't have a microchip, it's not like its name's tattooed on its arm. You know, you go and go, did this dog do this before? I don't know. Especially if it's just out running around. So, you know, the microchipping option is one. Another is that if this thing keeps happening, you may lose your dog. Wow.
Susie said, you may lose your dog. And then one of their neighbors is out shooting in their backyard. And all of a sudden you just heard a gunshot. It's like, oh my gosh, somebody just lost their dog.
Oh my goodness. That would, you know, that's what that's like. That's like when you're sitting in church. And the pastor says something, and then lightning strikes, yeah, you know, right? Like all of a sudden thunder like ripples through the sky. You're like, wow. Anyway, they may take your dog away from you, which in some situations, it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, if you can't control your dog, they're not going to punish the dog. They're going to take it away and give it to somebody who maybe can take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so anyway, that bill has passed the Virginia House, and who knows if it will go on to become law or not.
Be interesting to see.
Well, you asked for it. Here it is.
Okay, well, I want to share a really nice message we got from Cassandra on Facebook.
She said, I love your show. I'm a truck driver and I listen to you guys when I'm driving around the country. I found your podcast because I was looking to learn more about chicken keeping so that I'll be totally prepared to care for my future flock. I'll be living over the road for a few more years while I save to buy a home, and then I hope to find local work so I can enjoy my home and finally build a flock of my own, something I have always wanted to do someday. But because of this podcast, I have become even more passionate about chickens and even more excited to care for these fabulous little creatures. Warm regards, Cassandra.
Well, Cassandra, thank you so much for that word of encouragement. That's really nice.
It is always nice to hear of someone getting the information up front before they just bring those chickens home and then wonder what to do with them.
Like we did.
Yeah, like we did. And with Easter coming up, what a lot of other people are going to do, I think.
That's true. You know, this brings something up for me. I'm not saying this is a great idea, but when I was growing up, over-the-road trucks were only so big. You know, they were big.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, when you look at trucks now, it's like they got an 1,800 square foot apartment tacked on the back of the cab.
I know. How cool.
I mean, you wonder if there's any room for transporting cargo around with how big some of these trucks have gotten. But Cassandra's message has me wondering, why not like a little mobile chicken coop attached to the truck?
Oh my goodness.
I'm not saying like enough for 10 chickens, but you could maybe have like two chickens in there as your pets.
Well, maybe, but you'd have to be really careful with the potholes, you know, because chickens laying an egg and, you know, you go in to collect the eggs and you're like, oh, scrambled eggs again.
There's nothing wrong with scrambled eggs. I got to imagine all the truck stops you're eating at, you'd take a couple fresh scrambled eggs anytime. I'm trying to imagine you go into the truck stop and then Flo comes over to take your order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you have, sweetheart? You just hand her a couple eggs. Could you cook these up for me?
Oh, that'd be priceless. You may have plenty of room for a couple little hens, and they're running around your truck, and now you're in your truck. Like,
no, they're not running around. They're in a little coop. You have a little coop inside the cab.
Okay. You got a little coop. They're in there 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
7 days a week.
Sure.
Going to the bathroom.
On the shavings.
On the shavings. And you think our garage smells bad? You'd see every truck driver driving with their windows down, even in the middle of winter, like, whoosh, I got to get some fresh air in here.
Like most things in life, most everything I know about truck driving stems from watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
But if BJ McKay could drive around with his monkey named Bear in his truck, I mean, you tell me monkey poop smells better than chicken poop?
I don't know. I have a feeling he was out walking his monkey at the rest areas or something, letting it relieve itself.
Well, I think you're going to have to change the shavings in the truck, you know, every couple stops.
Well, yeah, I think that's
you're not going to just let it go for 6 weeks.
All right. I think Cassandra has now stopped listening to our podcast because she thinks we're crazy.
Or she's shopping for a little chicken coop that'll fit inside of her truck.
Maybe.
Cassandra, if you figure out a way to keep a couple hens in your truck on the road, you let us know because I'm going to make you a regular member on the show. I'm going to have you call in with the chicken keeper on the road portion of the podcast every episode.
I love it.
Okay, well, before we get to the main feature today, I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping on Amazon this week, consider going to our website first at onlinechickenschool.com and clicking on the Amazon link over there.
And it's going to take you to the same Amazon site that you know and love, and you're going to pay the exact same price for the things you buy, but Amazon's going to give us a little bit of a commission, and every little bit helps us pay for some of the podcasting bills.
So if you like the show and you want to help us keep it up, just go to onlinechickenschool.com and click on the Amazon link to make all your Amazon purchases. Some of you are doing this on a regular basis, and we really, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
There they go again. More shameless self-promotion.
All right, for today's main feature, we're going to answer a question submitted through our website by Maggie in Michigan.
And Maggie writes, "Hello, Don and Susie. I've adopted 10 hens from an acquaintance. They all have scaly leg mites. Some have it worse than others."
Yikes.
"I did some research and I have been doing this treatment so far. Every couple days, wash feet and legs, scrub with a nail brush, rinse in a vinegar water mix, dry, dip in olive oil, apply Vaseline on feet and legs. I've also been putting diatomaceous earth in the coop, nesting boxes, roosting bars, run, etc. So far, they've had about 4 treatments. I can't tell if there's an improvement or if I have killed all the mites. I know it's going to be a while for the feet to look better and heal, but I really want to make sure the mites are gone. Any recommendations will be appreciated. I also have 13 hens of my own. Luckily, I've been listening to your podcast and know to quarantine the sick flock from my current one."
Good job.
"Thanks. I love your podcast. Always looking forward to a new one. It's entertaining and so informative. Keep it up, Maggie."
Well, I tell you, Maggie must be really, really glad that she decided to quarantine that flock from her own.
Yeah.
Because scaly leg mites will go from one chicken to another
Oh, man.
And we're going to talk about the treatment of this, and it's intensive. It's labor intensive.
Well, for even... And
the difference between you doing it for 10 hens or doing it for 23,
oh my God. Oh, wow. I don't even know how you do it with 10. That's a lot. That's like a full-time job.
Well, let's start off by talking about what are scaly leg mites.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, mites are these very tiny, tiny little parasites.
Mm-hmm.
And they look like insects, except they have 8 legs, more like a spider.
Ew.
They're one of the little buggers that you're going to be looking for if you do the monthly parasite checks that we recommend.
Right.
The other two parasites you check for at the same time are fleas and lice.
Pretty much anything crawling around.
Yeah, if it's crawling on your bird, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, typically, you see mites infest the skin and feathers around a chicken's vent because mites are little bloodsuckers.
Mm.
And this is the area of your chicken where the blood vessels are closest to the surface of the skin.
Right.
So that's why you always flip the bird upside down and check around the vent, because this is the place you're most likely to spot them first.
Now, these scaly leg mites, they're like a little more vicious. They actually dig their way up under the scales on a bird's leg and feet. Normally, the scales are going to lay nice and flat against each other. But when you've got an infestation of scaly leg mites, they're going to start to look like they've been pushed out, or sometimes they even have like a crusty appearance. It's not going to be pleasant.
This can be very, very painful for your chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let it go on long enough, I mean, it can actually lead to the bird becoming lame.
Yeah.
They'll lose their ability to walk. And if you really let it go far, in some cases, it can lead to the death of your chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've identified that this is what they have, now you're going to have to start some kind of treatment regimen to get rid of this. So we're going to talk about a few different treatment options. One is kind of a more natural way of dealing with it. One involves drugs, and the other is kind of going the napalm route.
That's right. So we're going to go all the extremes.
So we'll talk about the three. You decide what sort of works for you. This is one of those things that thankfully we have never personally had to deal with.
Right.
So we pick these three remedies based on the fact that we believe in the research we've done that these are things that will work.
Mm-hmm.
We've skipped over remedies that might work for all we know, but when Farmer Bob says, I go out and I play him a tune on my banjo, I eat 2 Twinkies and I go to bed. The next morning I wake up and all the mites have moved out. I just don't know. I'm not saying it doesn't work, but I don't see how it works.
Yeah, we're kind of using more of the respected people in chicken keeping's ideas and things that they've actually tried that have worked for them. All right, now, with any of these treatments that you decide to do, you're going to need to do it with every single one of your hens that are in that coop. Even if it doesn't look like they're infested, it doesn't mean they don't have the mites. So do yourself a favor, do all of the chickens in the coop so that you can knock this thing out in one swoop instead of having to do this for months and months and months and months with more and more chickens.
Exactly. All right. So which one of these three you want to start with?
I want to start with the treatment that I got from Lisa Steele from Fresh Eggs Daily. We actually had her as a guest on our podcast early on. She is more the 100% natural route. So she starts by saying you should really soak the legs and feet of your chicken in warm water and a mild dish soap, and then rinsing them and drying them off. Then she says to use an old toothbrush or a nail brush or some kind of a soft brush to scrub the legs of the chicken. And you're going to use a white vinegar and garlic juice or neem oil mixture. But you got to be really careful when you're brushing the legs of your chicken, because just imagine if that was you and under your fingernails were these parasites and they were pushing your fingernails up, and then someone comes along with a scrub brush and starts brushing it.
Well, just imagine when you have an infection.
Oh, yeah.
And how sore an area gets that's infected. And if someone just starts poking at it a little bit, I mean, if they just kind of go, oh, that looks like it's sore, and they touch it, it feels like it took a ball peen hammer and smacked your finger.
Right. So just be very careful and be very mindful that this is very painful for them. So gentle, everything gentle and with very light pressure. Now, other than having them smell like, Don always says, Italian night by rubbing the garlic juice on their legs, you're going to now apply some olive oil that's mixed with some cayenne pepper. Now, the cayenne pepper is good for promoting blood flow. You know, I remember when I was taking this one class in school, they said that eating cayenne pepper gets your blood going. And I'm like, well, yeah, when you eat something really, really spicy, your face turns red and your blood starts pumping through your body. So it's a good thing. You want blood to be moving through the system. Now, to make it a little better smelling, just to put a few drops of like some sweet orange essential oil or some kind of other natural essential oil that'll get it smelling all nice and sweet then.
Because no hen wants to smell like a jalapeno.
That's right. Now, let's say you don't have olive oil and you don't have the essential oils and all this stuff. She says you can even just wipe down their legs with some plain coconut oil. All these options are natural. They're not toxic. And the whole point is to smother the mites and suffocate them. And oil is a really good way to do that.
Okay, so the way you describe that, that actually sounds pretty easy.
Right.
Except for the fact that you're supposed to do this a couple times a week, and it could take months.
Right. Now figure in, you're not just doing this to one hen.
And this is where I have to say, Maggie, the fact that you took these hens in from your friend, then found out they have scaly leg mites, and didn't like just drive the van back over there and drop them all in her front yard the next morning with a note that says, thanks, but no thanks.
Right.
I think you're probably going to be nominated for Hen Manitarian of the Year.
Nice.
Because that is just, I mean, that is just a lot of work.
Right. And when you think, okay, they don't like you touching their feet when there is nothing wrong with their feet. Now imagine they're infested with mites and in horrible pain, and then you try and dip them in water and scrub them.
Well, I'm trying to think of the hen that's sitting there and, you know, it's like, okay, this is weird. What are you doing? And then they start to relax a little bit. It's like, oh, that's actually not so bad. That's kind of nice. Oh, I like that little massage you're giving me there. Oh, that's pretty nice. And then you start adding all those other ingredients in there. And at some point it's like, wait a minute, are you marinating me?
I didn't even think of that.
What's going on here? I mean, I was okay with the oils and the vegetable oil and all that stuff. When you started slicing up some cayenne pepper and jalapeno in there, I'm like, wait a minute, am I soup? You start putting tortilla chips in there, I'm out of here.
That's right. Okay, now Lisa recommends that you do this every other day or so. And you'll know you're done when the old scales fall off and nice, new, shiny, smooth scales regrow. I can see this taking months because it's not like these things happen overnight. So you're going to be doing this every other day or maybe every 2 days for a long time.
Okay, so let's discuss option number two. Compared to the timetable of option number one and the amount of work that goes into it, this one is going to sound like a dream.
Mm-hmm.
This treatment involves getting a drug called ivermectin. Now, if you're not absolutely sold on the everything I do for my chickens has to be 100% natural, you're probably already in the car driving down to the local farm supply store trying to figure out how do you spell ivermectin.
That's right.
But before you find it and get in the checkout line, you might want to consider the fact that although this works very quickly and supposedly will knock it out very fast, it's not really meant for chickens directly. It's not what it was designed for. And there hasn't been a lot of studies as to what effect that drug has on the chickens.
Mm-hmm. Now, with any time you use a wormer on your chicken, there's going to be a withdrawal period. So you're not going to be able to eat the eggs. And there really isn't a specified length of time when using this product of how long you need to wait. So that's kind of all up in the air and up to you.
When people say to use this, they keep saying, we don't know what the withdrawal time is, so don't use it on chickens that are used for eggs or meat.
Which is pretty much all of our chickens.
Right. So seeing how most people keep chickens for the eggs, you got a little dilemma there. It's either, well, I'm not going to eat the eggs anymore, or I'm just going to sort of guess my own withdrawal period and then hope that it's okay to eat the eggs after that.
Okay, now I'm going to suggest that you actually go talk to your vet about this.
And we're talking about a vet that has an animal medical degree, not someone who served our country overseas.
Okay, the third treatment is going to sound a little strange.
This is the napalm route.
Okay. This involves only two products. One is A&D ointment.
What is that?
Well, if anybody's had kids, they'll know it has the diaper rash treatment. So strange, but okay. A&D ointment. Ingredient number two.
Gasoline.
Gasoline.
Let that soak in for a minute. All right. The first step for this procedure is don't smoke.
Yeah. No open flames while performing this procedure, please.
So the first thing you do is you put some gasoline in a container that's tall enough to dip the hen's legs in it, because you don't want to brush this on their legs. You want to just give them a dip.
Mm-hmm.
So you dip their legs in the gasoline, make sure you cover all the affected area, and then just pull them out and hold the hen long enough for the gasoline to basically evaporate off her legs.
Mm-hmm. Then you're going to slather the chicken's legs with the A&D ointment. And what this does is it's going to soften the scales and it's going to promote the healing. So the gas is going to kill the mites and the A&D ointment is going to heal their legs from the gasoline burns.
Okay, so that's all you do on day one.
Mm-hmm.
Then on day two, all you're going to do that day is give them another treatment of the A&D ointment.
Right, no gasoline. But on day three, you're going to do the same treatment as day one. So dipping the legs in gasoline, letting it dry, and more A&D ointment. And supposedly, that's it. That's the course of treatment. 3 days, and you're done.
That sounds kind of extreme.
It sounds very smelly.
But again, this is something we found in quite a few sources, as ridiculous as it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about as far away from the natural treatment as you can get.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody could think up something more unnatural or chemical laden. But, you know, if you've got the extreme case again, and let's say you've got 30, 40, 50 birds that have this, you know, it's up to you what route you want to take, how much time you have. I don't know. I can see where people would use this.
Well, I'll tell you what, as we've been sitting here talking about scaly leg mites, my legs are itching.
I know. Is anybody else's legs itching talking about this?
I get this little twitch at my ankle. It's like, oh man, something's burrowing under my scales.
And then you realize you don't have any scales.
So I'm not even feeling the effect of that. And I'm ready to go dip my legs in gasoline just to make the itching stop, which I know is in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, one thing you should do, regardless of which of the treatment options you choose, is make sure somewhere during this course of treatment, you go out and clean that coop that your birds live in.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have a mite problem in your birds, you have a mite problem in your coop.
Right. And there's nothing more useless than getting rid of the mites on your bird and then putting them in a coop that's covered in mites.
So make sure you go out there sometime and clean that entire thing out. Scrub it top to bottom and sprinkle diatomaceous earth on the roost poles and on all the flat surfaces. And just give it a really, really, really good scrubbing. All right, so let's say you've never had scaly leg mites before, but now, after this little discussion, you are so freaked out about it. What are some things you can do to keep your birds from getting it in the first place?
Okay, first thing that you do to prevent any of these parasites is to keep your coop really, really clean. And when you do clean it, like Don said, sprinkle it with diatomaceous earth when you're done. Do that on a regular basis. You know, if you're using the deep litter method, you know, apply your new shavings, sprinkle diatomaceous earth. If you're cleaning it all out every single time, diatomaceous earth. I mean, it's one of those products that is really, really effective at stopping these parasites before they become a huge problem.
A second way to prevent this from happening in the first place is the same way you prevent all external parasites. And that is to make sure that your chicken has plenty of opportunity to dust bathe. Because this is how chickens naturally keep parasites in check, is the whole dust bathing ritual.
Right. Let them clean themselves. Now, there is one thing that we've talked about before in coop design that really comes back to play here. Mites burrow into wood. So if you have a wood floor in your coop, a good idea may be to either paint the floor or even apply something like vinyl flooring. I remember you did that in the first coop that you designed to make it much easier to clean. Well, it also prevents any of these parasites from burrowing into the wood.
It makes sure they don't have a place to make themselves at home while they're waiting for a chicken to come along to attach themselves to.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And other than that, like we always say, make sure you're keeping up with those monthly parasite checks, because the faster you identify the problem, the easier it is to knock out.
Well, Maggie, we appreciate the question. We think what you're doing is great. We think the treatment you've decided to go on is a good one, and we hope it's a quick and speedy treatment for you.
And Manitarian of the Year.
That's Maggie.
Q-Talent.
I do already have a name picked out.
He is a Bard Rock, and you had it narrowed down to Chris Rock or Bard Rock.
You said... Okay, try it again. Take two.
Take two. I mean, you wonder if there's any room for transporting cargo around with how big some of these trucks have gotten.
All right, well, I want to ask Cassandra a question.
Okay, I was going somewhere with that.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I guess we could do your thing.
No, go ahead.
Sorry
do
if the...
Everything you want to do.
Sorry if the middle of my sentence interrupted the beginning of yours.
Go ahead, hurry.
The other two parasites you check for at the same time are fleas and lice.
Pretty much anything crawling around.
Yeah, if it's crawling on your bird, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a rooster.
Ayaka, ayaka, ayaka.
That's gonna work great, man.
Well, as always, thank you for listening. If you like the show, consider going to iTunes and giving us a really, really nice rating over there. Also, make sure you tell a friend and get them listening.
And if you want to see the show notes for this episode, go to onlinechickenschool.com/61. Well, that's all for today. Talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Online Chicken School Podcast. Look for us on the web at onlinechickenschool.com.